life. For Pastor Monty to say that, that's something. So I'm excited to hear what he has to say as well. So, Pastor Schmidt, it's all yours.
Thank you. Let's.
You understand the system. At 5 minutes till,
you're going to wave at
my
me.
Hand. At two yep. minutes, and at zero, I'll push you out.
They get a big hook and they drag me off. Okay, so we have 30 minutes, so I'm going to hurry. If you would turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 with me. I'm going to give you a very brief version of a much longer message. The message that he heard was shared with the youth workers at Camp Kobiak and also at the Wilds. I shared the same message both places. It was entitled Fiery Marriage, Fruitful Ministry. And basically, just kind of an appealing back of my heart and our heart, I should say, my wife and I. We've been married 24 years. This is our 25th year. I can't believe how fast it's gone by. And we're very much in love and we're best friends. But it hasn't been because there's some magical formula to it, okay? It's because, number one, failure was not an option. we just refused. We just had to work through our stuff. And we've had plenty of stuff, okay? We have had plenty of issues. Some of those issues were a few days. Some of them were a few weeks. Some of them were a few months. Some of them were a year. I mean, we had times in our marriage where, like, what is wrong with us? And where are we at? And I'm not the kind of guy that's going to get up and tell you, here's how I have a perfect marriage, and if you were like me, you could have one too. You know, what I'm going to tell you is I have a broken marriage because I'm a broken person. But we have a broken marriage that we continually work at and keep trying to discover God's grace, and we keep having to repent and forgive and make things right, and me more than her. But 1 Corinthians 7 says, now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it's good for a man not to touch a woman. Verse 2, nevertheless, to avoid fornication. How many of you know somebody that's fallen out of ministry because of sexual sin? Okay. It's a mess. And it's a trap. It's always a trick. It's a deep, dark hole of deception. And it's very powerful. I've talked to men that have fallen into this. One man a few months ago just called me out of the blue and he said, I knew what I was doing, I knew it was wrong, I knew it was going to destroy me, but he said almost felt powerless against it. You can get under that delusion where the Satan has trapped a lot of men. So to avoid fornication, how do we avoid fornication? Let every man have his own wife, let every woman have her own husband. There's way, I could teach for 3 hours on these verses, but there's way more here than we have time to unpack. But verse 3, let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. We're going to take that phrase, let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. And likewise, the wife unto the husband. We love to hear what our wives are supposed to be giving us. Oh, we love those messages, all right? But very few... I don't want to say that. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. Likewise, the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. We love to say to our wives, hey, here's my body, it's yours, take it. What we don't realize is she wants to put your body in the car and take it to the mall. That's the truth. We think of this passage that it's all sexual in nature, and it's not, okay? Because we think through the lens of our needs, and your needs may be, you've got 4 or 5 components to your makeup in terms of what you need as a husband, but the most dominant, the most frequently recurring, the one you think about the most happens to be your sexual needs, okay? So we read this, we think of fornication, sexual sin, we read it through our lens of, well, this is all about sex. The wife hath not power over her own body, so that's sex. Husband hath not power over his own body, so that's sex. It's really about meeting each other's needs, okay? Sex is one of them, all right? I got a dry erase board. But there's more needs in a marriage than sex, okay? There are emotional and relational needs and conversational needs. There's spiritual needs. All of those needs come under the word render, let the husband render unto the wife. Let the wife render unto the husband. Okay? Verse 5, defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent. The word defraud is a very strong word. That's you know, our word fraud, it's criminal activity. Okay? Here's the premise of what I'm going to say. All right? Before your ministry, let me just say it this way, your greatest ministry, if you have a wife, your greatest ministry is your wife. Okay? And some of you are defrauding your wife and you don't realize it. Well, say, so how do you know, Carrie? Because I did. And I wanted, in my pride and my arrogance and my, at times, my brutish, defensive spirit, I wanted to change my wife's scale of need rather than render due benevolence. Okay? I wanted to debate with my wife that she shouldn't need what she needs as frequently as she needs it, to the level that she needs it. I wanted to argue with her the legitimacy of her need rather than dwell with her according to knowledge and giving honor unto the weaker vessel. Okay? In other words, I wanted to be stubborn, obstinate. So here is, in a nutshell, here's what happened to us. Okay, we got married. We were 21, 22. We came to the wedding altar and made a vow that we were going to render due benevolence. Okay, and that I didn't even understand what a woman's needs were in those moments. Okay, I understood what my needs were, so I fully expected my wife to get on board. She was going to be my completer. She was going to help me in the ministry. She was going to help me raise a family. She was going to be my lover and my companion, and we were going to have this abundant, you know, wonderful physical relationship that would help us both avoid fornication. And I had my needs in mind. We jumped into ministry together 6 months after we got married. And we experienced an immediate tension. The foundation of our expectation was, I need a wife to complete me and fulfill me. And the foundation of her expectation was, I need a husband to care for me and cultivate my needs relationally and spiritually and provide for me and protect me. And her expectations were fully biblical and fully reasonable. And my expectations were fully biblical and fully reasonable. What we experienced was that as soon as we got into ministry, there was a tug of war for our energy, our time, primarily mine, because suddenly I'm diving in, you know, to this, you know, need of the world, gospel ministry. How do you put boundaries around gospel ministry? You know, at what point do you? There's always need. There's always people to call. There's always doors to knock. There's always people to share the gospel with. There's always messages to prepare. This is not a river of opportunity. This is a galactic, cosmic ocean of opportunity. How can you put boundaries on it? So literally, you know, the work ethic, mentality of, we could work 24/7 if there were 8 days a week. We could work 24/8 if there were 48 hours in a day. We could 48 hours. We don't need more time. If we had more time, we would just fill it up with more ministry. Okay, there's ministry will fit the time you give it. It will always absorb everything you give it. Okay, it's boundless. It is infinite in its opportunity. Okay, so I jumped into to ministry, and I was scaling my availability to my wife based on what I thought she should need. And I was scaling that based on what I needed from her. Okay, so early in our marriage, I was only too willing and ready to be physical, but I expecting her to have the same kind of physical needs I had. And I was much more rationing with our relational time, expecting that she didn't need so much because I was consumed with ministry, okay? But I had it all wrong. I had it all wrong. And I was bruising my wife and hurting her and didn't realize it. Okay, and so this tension began to come into our relationship within the first few months of ministry, and it was a distress in her. I'm not getting enough time with you, and I haven't seen you, and we haven't gone out, and you're a lot busier than you were when we first got, and before we were married, and why, and where, the tension was made worse because my posture was defensive. My posture was, well, get used to it, this is ministry. Which was stupid, arrogant, proud, thoughtless, insensitive, unshepherdly, unbiblical, unchristlike. Okay. My attitude was sometimes, support me. You married me to support me. You're my completer. We're supposed to be doing this together. Support me in the ministry. And the insinuation was she didn't want to support me in the ministry. You know, which was, again, thoughtless, stupid, arrogant, proud, jerky. Okay? She didn't marry me to not support me in the ministry. All right, guys, your wife loves the ministry. All right, even if she's going with tears and distress, we don't get enough time together. It's not that she doesn't like the ministry. It's not that she doesn't want to support you, okay? It's that she has needs that you're not meeting. And you can yell at her and try to beat her down to needing less, and you're not going to get anywhere except at the judgment seat of Christ. You're going to see and you're going to regret not meeting her needs. And you're going to answer to the Lord for why you were so abusive to one of his children. Say, that's abusive? Yes. If you are not, let me say it this way. Your wife's emotional state is your responsibility. And it is more important than the state of your church or the state of your youth group. Jesus said, love your wife as I love the church. He didn't say, love the church as I love the church. So we had this tension. My cry was, support me. Her cry was, love me. And we both were at the other end of the rope, and I felt like she was pulling me from ministry, and I felt like I was trying to pull her to be involved and getting involved in the work with me. And we were both operating out of fear and anxiety. We were both functioning out of, she was functioning out of, what if he neglects me? And I was. By her standards, I was. By my standards, I wasn't. The question is, who sets the scale? Who sets the standard? Okay? Well, for your needs, you set the standard. For her needs, she sets the standard. All right? So I get to tell Dana if she's meeting my needs. She gets to tell me if I'm meeting her needs. I don't get to tell her I'm meeting your needs the way I want them to be met. So shut up. That's jerky. And that's what I tried to do. I tried to tell her to stop needing so much. We have a line that we men use, and we need to just ban it from our vocabulary, okay? Because it's demeaning, it is arrogant, it's stupid. And we say this. I hear it in marriage counseling. I've thought it about my own wife. Every man thinks this, even if you don't say it. At some point, you're going to think, oh, she is just so... fill in the blank. Needy. Here's the problem with that statement. So are you. So are you. What did you expect to marry? A telephone pole? A bowling ball? I mean, there are objects that have less need. She's a human being. Okay, she has needs. And her needs aren't just to support you in the ministry. Her needs aren't just to make love to you, okay? Those fit into her calling, yeah. But she has need. You do too, all right? And every man that says that to me, I want to go, man, you're an idiot. Yeah, of course she's needy. That's why she needed you. That's why God gave you to her. Well, she should get her needs met by God. Okay. So should you. Okay, So, the tension led to breakdown. 5 years in, we were a mess. She was really hurting. I was really frustrated. Okay? Neither one of us were getting the needs met the way we wanted to have them met. And there, when I say breakdown, it was two levels. The first one was our marriage. We weren't talking about divorce. I wasn't going to cheat on her. We weren't going somewhere else for our needs. But both of us would have given each other a D minus, okay, if we were grading each other. So the relationship was not strong and healthy, and it was committed. It was covenant. We weren't going anywhere, but we needed help. And the second breakdown was God broke my spirit, okay? Because up to this point, I was stiff-necked. I had an attitude of resistance towards a work that God was trying to do in my heart. And one day, I was at home for lunch, and Dana was in distress because I was dating her and taking her out and talking to her, but on my scale, okay? And I'll explain that in a minute. Not to the degree she needed. So if her needs were compared to thirst, I was giving her a glass of water, you know, every week or every 10 days, and she needs a glass of water every day or every other day, okay? And I was telling her to stop being so thirsty. And she was telling me, please give me more water, all right? It's not your job to scale down your wife's thirst. It's your job to understand her thirst and to fill her glass, okay? That's your job. And if you're not filling her glass, I got news for you. It's not going to, God's not going to honor your work. He's not going to honor your ministry, okay? So the breakdown was the broken relationship, but secondly, the broken, God showed me in a moment. And it was like he took blinders off my eyes. Instead of seeing a resistant woman, an obstinate woman demanding her way and refusing to, you know, come my way, suddenly I saw a weaker vessel that I was abusing. Not physically. I wasn't cussing at her. I wasn't yelling and screaming at her. I was abusing her by not giving her what she needed. Okay? Maybe we call it a more moderate form of abuse. But listen, if you've got a child that has thirst every day, and you say, you can have a glass of water in 2 days, I think you're abusing that child. Okay? I think you're not fulfilling. This word defraud in this passage is pretty strong. Okay? You are forcing your spouse to go without something that you have covenanted, promised to provide, that is due them, that is reasonable, that they need in order to healthily function in life and in this relationship. And you have unilaterally decided to withhold something you've promised to give, something that God expects you and requires you to give. And that's not a good place to be. And I saw all of a sudden, oh my goodness, I am neglecting, I am hurting, I am breaking this weaker vessel. And I came to a point, man, where I literally resigned. I went to Pastor Chapel. I didn't blame him. I just blamed myself for taking on too much. And a big part of this is accepting responsibility. Okay, you are nobody's hostage but yourself. You're not the pastor's hostage. You're not the church's hostage. You're not the deacon's hostage. Nobody's holding you to your schedule but you. Well, you say, well, I'm an assistant pastor and pastor's holding me to the schedule. No, you are choosing to work for that man. Right? And most likely your pastor doesn't want you to neglect your family. And if he does, go away fast. Okay? So I sat down with Dana, I apologized, I asked her to forgive me, I repented in my spirit, I said, you know what, we're not going to do this. I'm not going to build a ministry at the expense of you or the expense of our children. And I had gone down a road that I never wanted to go down, but I found myself at the end of this road going, oh my goodness, I went down this road, I can't believe I went down this road. And I asked for an appointment with Pastor Chapel. I sat down. With tears, I said, I need to resign my position. And I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to leave anywhere. But can you give me a job cutting grass? Can you give me a job teaching fifth grade? I need a schedule. I need a predictable schedule. I need to go home in the evenings. I need to spend time with my wife and family. I need to not be always in a hurry. I'm doing too much. I've got to scale back. And if you don't have a place for me, I understand. in that, the outcome of that meeting was Pastor Chappell looked at me. I thought he was going to accept my resignation, give me a more predictable job and less responsibility and less pay. All of that was fine with me. I was ready to do good by my family. He not only understood where I was, but he said, listen, I just told him, I can't do this job. And he said, you can. He said, I know where you're at. I've been there myself. We just need to restructure your life and create more margin. What he said is, you have no margin. And I said, yeah, you're right. And I thought that was noble and what was expected, and turns out it wasn't what was expected. And over the next few months, we radically, my whole job description, my whole work world changed. My job description didn't change, but we hired several people and different things. We shuffled, and I ended up overseeing a lot of what I was trying to do, but we ended up putting a lot more margin back into my schedule. And I promised my wife we'll never go back. And God helped us over the next couple of years to pull out of the ditch we were in. And we discovered a synergy. We discovered a principle that I have, I guess, 10 minutes to try to teach you, okay? Let me give you the principles. Number one, the first principle is providence. And this is God's role, okay? It's His church, my family is His, I'm His. He has called me to my wife, to my family, and to my ministry. He has given me enough time to do them all and to sleep. He has made me to need 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. It is not spiritual to sleep less. It's not unspiritual to sleep more. Okay? Whoever taught you that was wrong. Okay? They lied to you. All right? It is not noble to kill yourself or to neglect your family for the sake of the ministry. When you do that, you are neglecting biblical principles. You are making yourself God. And you are saying, God, you need me. And so I'm going to, and because, God, you have set this up where it's all on me, it's all about me and my effort, I'm going to pour all of myself into ministry and neglect my wife and family and expect them to be okay with that because the ministry requires sacrifice. I've heard men actually get up in a pulpit and preach or teach in different contexts that it is that your wife needs to surrender you to the ministry. That is heretical. That is completely unbiblical. Okay? And I'm going to tell you, that will kill your ministry, it will kill your family, and it will remove the hand of God's blessing supernaturally from your life. You can expect Haggai 1 to unfold for you in a different way. Haggai 1, these people said, it's not time for God's temple. It's time for me to make money. And God said, I'm working against you. I am working against you. If you're neglecting your family or your wife, God is working against you. Because in your pride, you have set yourself as the savior of the ministry at the expense of your family. Jesus is the savior, not you and not me. Okay? So providence is, this is God's. God gave me a church. God gave me a wife. God gave me kids. God expects me to love my family like He loves the church. And then He expects me to, with balance, serve the church that He loves. And He says, if you'll take care of these priorities, if you'll honor my Sabbath, if you'll honor my tithe, if you'll honor my laws, if my framework of how things work, then I will supernaturally bless. Okay, so God said, I'm giving you 7 days, give me one of them back. And I'm going to make you more productive in the six than you would have been in the seven. Okay, and God says, I'm going to give you 100%, give me back 10 or more, and I'm going to make your 90 or 80 or 85% go further than your 100% would have gone. Okay, so what I decided to do was, all right, I'm taking my day off, I'm sleeping my 8 hours, I'm resting when I need to rest, I'm going to get time with my family, and I'm going to give my children and my wife time, and I'm going to expect, I'm going to believe that God's going to bless the 6 days or the 5 days that I put in greater than He would have blessed the 7 days if I just blew myself out, if I just expended myself. So providence, putting it back in God's hands. Okay, I'm not God, I'm not the Savior, I can't do it all, and it's not noble to try. It's arrogant to try. Okay, It's a massive overestimation of who I am and who God is and who, what the church is and what my family needs. The principle, second is the principle of honor. Okay? This ties into providence, but here it is. When you honor God, He touches the little that you have to offer Him. Okay? None of us are superstars, guys. We're all nothing. Okay? The whole, you know, a generation ago there was this mentality of great men of God. You know, none of us are great. Let's just be honest about it. We're all a mess. We all have issues. We're all broken. Anything good that happens in my church or your church is not because of us. And it's a joke to think so. It's because we honored God's principles and we got out of God's way and God blessed it. Let's face it, the story I told last night of Abby, that wasn't because of me. If you took anything away from that story, it should have been, wow, God really worked in spite of him. I failed, I chickened out, I forgot. And when I finally did figure it out, I'm like a little plastic Lego piece. And God's this master designer, you know, that's doing it all. And the question is, do you want to be a part of what he's doing? And it's really stupid for the Lego piece to get, you know, all heady and arrogant about, well, aren't I important to this? Well, no, there's 6 billion others just like you. It's pretty stupid of us to think that. Now, in God's economy, I'm just this nothing little plastic, inanimate, you know, thing that he can make another one just like me, or he can make 6 billion more just like me. But to my wife, I'm all she has in terms of those needs. I mean, I'm pretty significant to my kids. You've heard it. The church can get another pastor, but my family can't get another me. You know, so, but when you honor God, he's going to touch what you're doing. Now, how do you honor God in this picture? When you care for your wife, you are honoring God. That's what I missed. When you carve out time, more time than you need. This isn't about you. This is about her. When you carve out more time than you need and more time than you think she should need, drop it. You're not the standard bearer. Okay? You're not the global authority for women's needs. The third principle is the principle of rendering. I got 3 minutes. Give her what she needs. Well, how do I know what she needs? Ask her. And don't argue with her. What do you need? All right, you're going to get it. And make her a priority. I'm telling you, you want to see God's hand in your church, you take care of your wife. You love your wife. You cherish your wife. And you are saying, God, it's your church. You gave me the bride. I'm going to love this bride. And you bless your bride. And He will. You render. You give. And then the final principle is the principle of blessing. And I've already said this, but God's blessing is not a product of my ingenuity. It's not a product of my ability. God's blessing is a product of me living in submission to Him. When I render to my wife, I'm living in submission to Him. And here's what we found out. When I render to Dana, she renders to me. That's why the verse says, let the husband render unto the wife. You're going to find out the wife will render back. When I began to give abundantly to Dana, I found her, all of a sudden, it's like the tug of war stopped. Suddenly we both laid down our ropes, we joined hands, and we went forward together in ministry, and it's never been the same. Suddenly there was a synergy there, okay, that changed everything. I got 2 minutes. Let me finish with this. I use this in premarital counseling. Okay, let's let this represent a 30-day period of time. And let's let these curves represent needs. Okay? Your needs are primarily physical or sexual. This is a brief, very, very brief treatment of this. Her needs are primarily relational and emotional. So where you're going to want to be, you know, your definition of romance involves the bedroom. Her definition of romance involves taking long walks and talking. Or affection, or sitting at dinner over candle, or, you know, lots of time and focus and attention. the way you feel when you are physically intimate is the way she feels when you are emotionally intimate. Okay? And one fuels the other. So if this is the woman, her emotional curve is like this. It peaks out more frequently. She needs you, you know, every few days, relationally, focusing and attentive. If this is the man's curve, this is your physical need, okay? And it peaks out every day, every other day, every 3 days. So they're equal opposites, okay? If you're talking about the man's need relationally to go for long walks, this is the curve. No, this is not a joke. I could go 10 days or 2 weeks without taking, you know, having a two-hour conversation with Dana. I love her. She's my friend, but let's go shoot something. Let's go fish. Let's go, you know, we're different creatures, okay? But sometimes her physical need is like that. And the key to a starving marriage, a dying marriage is on this curve. And both people are expecting the other to convert to their curve. An abundant marriage is on this curve. And both people are giving abundantly to each other. Okay, so that's it in a nutshell. But guys, there's a supernatural component to this. When you care for your wife, God will honor what you're doing. Okay.